The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Excited for the final mock draft Monday of 2020. I think maybe we'll do a 2021 mock draft Monday next Monday. Probably not. We'll grade the draft. The draft is this week. Make sure and watch CBS Sports HQ. If you like the Pick Six Podcast and you want to support us, we are doing our show. We've been doing it every day, 4 to 5 Eastern on CBS Sports HQ, but I believe we'll be doing an hour pregame show for the draft. So 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. on Friday, and then 11 a.m. to noon on Saturday. If you like the podcast, if you like us, or even remotely like us, please feel free to support us by watching. I'll be tweeting it out. We're going to be doing a live mock draft today, making picks like it's like we're Roger Goodell in a basement. Four guys on it. It's me. It's Ryan Wilson, Josh Edwards, and RJ White. Hello, guys.
What's up?
You see, Ryan, that's how you do it. RJ says, what's up?
Friends, how's that?
Josh, how are we doing?
Doing pretty well. It's getting ready to pour here, so I'm glad that the neighbor is getting a solid mow in.
We can't hear it. What kind of beer are you drinking there, Josh?
So this is Northern Lights IPA from the Star Hill Brewery in Virginia.
Yeah, very good. That's a good beer.
Yeah, pretty good.
I've got a Noda Hop Drop and Roll. It was a, let's see, where was it? It was a award-winning, won some award for being a really good IPA. It's out of Charlotte. And they've just started coming up to Raleigh. If you can find this, I highly recommend it. It is I think it's actually a double IPA, but it is robust.
By the way, I saw someone tweeted at you about going to the Andrew ABC store. I tweeted back. You didn't even respond. I thought that was pretty rude. I said, if you're in Andrew, North Carolina, just go down the road to Buies Creek and stand, get your picture next to the Homer Ryan Wilson sign.
Well, what was your address there? I'm sure you know it, right?
Oh, that's a good question. Golly, I can't remember. That's a lot. That's a whole damn. We lived in two places there, one next to the pool and then one on the way to Coates.
On the way to Coates?
Coates, North Carolina. Coates is
And I was like, is that a store? I've never even heard of that.
No, it's a
next time, I can't wait to explain to my wife that when we're going to Fayetteville to see my in-laws that we need to take 401 this time.
There you go.
Through Angier's to go by a liquor store. I'm sure that'll go over.
Andrew,
whatever.
You don't want to stick out like some, what's that stupid shirt you wear that all the preppies wear? Vineyard Vines. You don't want to stand out like a Vineyard Vines yacht club guy.
Yeah, but that's okay. I'll wear a dirty t-shirt.
Well, just say Andrew's what I mean. Don't say, hey, is this Angier?
Angier? I'm looking for your finest bourbon. Okay. This podcast is already just a disaster. If you want to listen to a different one in the feed, make sure and check it out. We have some classic games that we broke down. Rich Gannon made him talk to me for 30 minutes about the Tuck Rule game. I'm sure that was awesome for him. hey, Rich, you want to relive your lowest professional moment for 30 minutes with Will Brinson on the Pick Six podcast. Yeah, sounds great, guys. Richard's actually awesome and very accommodating. Trent Green broke down a bunch of classic Colts-Pats games. We're running these classic games on CBS Sports Network. Trent Green, that was an awesome conversation. And then Brady Quinn and B-Mac, Brian McFadden, talked about the Tim Tebow beating the Steelers in the playoffs. B-Mac's final game of his career. So really doing a great job lining up these guests to talk about fun events for them.
Wait, it wasn't B-Mac's final game, was it?
Yeah, he retired after 2011.
Oh, that was the 2011 season.
Yeah.
Good gracious.
I remember watching that game like it was yesterday, but man.
Yeah, you were spending a lot of it making fun of me.
Probably. We were still podcasting back then. We're doing this for a long time, Ryan. We will have a 5-star review mailbag questions. We have a draft mailbag before the draft kicks off. So if you want to leave a 5-star review, now would be the time to do it. Of course, we will keep talking about all the draft rumors. We will have a draft gambling preview with all the props. I've gotten some questions about those. So if you have props if you have a list of props that you want us to take a look at, let me know. I will happily break them down on the podcast for you. If you want to drop that in the review, that'd be great. You can also DM me on Twitter. For some stupid reason, I still have my DMs open. We got some prospect interviews coming up as well. And then, of course, we will react and do winners and losers after the draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So make sure and get, you know, we'll check your feed because as soon as the draft ends, we'll get that thing fired up. We are going to make these picks. And Debo has in the rundown that I should briefly explain the pick system. I don't know what the pick system is. So, Debo, you're the commissioner for this draft. What's the pick system?
RJ, I'm going to pass it right off. RJ, help us out.
Yeah, so what we did is we tried to give each person 8 first-round picks but keep the same teams. So if you wanted to trade up, if you're Miami, you know, you didn't have a situation where somebody has the number 5 pick for Miami and somebody else has the 18 pick because that wouldn't make sense trying to make a deal. So it's just basically trying to keep everybody picking within a group of 4, you know, at least one person gets, everybody gets a 1-4 pick, everyone gets a 5-8 pick, that kind of thing. And then just, you know, chopping the teams up so we all have the same teams throughout the first round.
And we have made the picks ahead of time, but we will act like this is a live mock. So, get excited for it. Shall we?
Let's.
Debo, are you going to say on the clock first, or should I say I'm on the clock and then you announce the pick? What do you want to do?
I'll just announce it. We couldn't find that parrot that made the picks from a couple years ago, so I'm the next best option, I guess. But with the first overall pick in the 2020 Pick 6 virtual mock live draft, the Cincinnati Bengals, a.k.a. Will Brinson, select Joe Burrow, quarterback, LSU.
Do you think Roger Goodell's family will boo him on the if he has any sense of humor, he needs to bring his kids down to the basement and have them just be like, "Ooh, Dad, boo!"
Does he have young kids?
I don't know.
He's a little over. He's older than me.
Do you think he would arrange that, or do you think it just happened naturally? Like, do his kids just walk around booing him just in general? Just like
right. Most NFL fans. That's a typical Thursday night for Roger Goodell.
Let's see. He has 2 children, and I don't know how – let's see. I didn't know. He married a former – I didn't know his wife was a Fox News anchor. Oh, 2 daughters born in 2001. So perfect. Oh, fuck, come on. Like 18 or 19-year-old daughters just relentlessly booing their father on national television is perfect. Nope. Okay. I'm the only one who likes the idea, I see.
It's a great idea. All right.
This is great Joe Burrow to the Bengals analysis. I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, like, this Burrow thing is just, let's get on with it. You know, it's interesting. I thought the thing you keep hearing is like that the Bengals might have already given him the playbook or like.
Yeah, Daner tweeted about, my buddy Paul Daner from the Inquirer said it would be silly to think that they're not already discussing. And I think part of the way he framed it, because I went back and read the tweet, I didn't want to put words in his mouth. All the 30 visits they're allowed to have via Skype and the meetings elsewhere before the quarantine, I think they spent a lot of time talking about the Bengals playbook to get an idea of how he would sort of respond to it. And so I think that's it. I don't think they've literally given him the playbook, so I don't want to get Dana in trouble if I'm making up stuff for him.
Yeah, I mean, they can't give him the playbook. That would be a clear violation of the CBA. But they can have detailed schematic discussions with Joe Burrow about how the offense would potentially operate during their interview. There's nothing wrong with that. That's
if you have 30 minutes or an hour, whatever it is, they ain't talking about Joe Burrow's upbringing and why he's the way he is. They're talking about X's and O's. And I think that was the thrust of the tweet.
Yeah, but I guess my point was it seemed like it was more, they're not like trying to figure out if they should take him based on X's and O's. They are trying to get him X's and O's information to get him ahead of the curve,
right?
Since they are going to take him. So, I mean, this is a slam dunk, right? I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Slam dunk. If there was going to be a trade, it would have happened by this point. So slam dunk, Bengals taking Burrow. Move on to the next one.
Okay. I am curious. So where does Burrow rank for you guys in terms of, like the prospects of the last 3 or 4 years?
I would put him number one. I would put him better than Baker, better than Darnold, than anyone else you want to throw out there. You know, it might be best since Luck. It's just he has all the tools that you want. We'll see how successful he can be in this system. Zach Taylor's still very unproven. You know, he was a Sean McVay acolyte, but he hasn't really proven anything on his own. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, he kind of has the feel of a guy that's going to have success no matter where he lands. Now, you put him in the right system, that's the difference between, you know, a Super Bowl or 7, 8, 9 wins. But I think he can carry an offense to that level of success if he has to.
So knowing what you know now, RJ, for the next 5 years, are you taking Joe Burrow, which is their number one guy, or Lamar Jackson?
Lamar, but, you know, we're talking about coming out as prospects. You know, I liked Lamar coming in that draft. I think I had him mocked in the 16-17 range. I might have even had a team trading up to get him in that range that year. But, you know, as far as prospects go, Burrow seems to be a much more complete prospect. And part of the reason Lamar is so successful is the guys he landed with. You know, I don't know that he would have been MVP level good on, let's say, 28 other teams, 29 other teams maybe, but he just happened to land with a great coaching staff that knows how to scheme and get the best out of all the guys that they have. So I think that's kind of the thing you have to build into the system. Mahomes, on the other hand, you know, he probably would have been good no matter what, where he went. But I don't know that he's as good as he is now with Andy Reid, that we could be talking about him top 10 all time when it's all said and over.
Anybody taking Joe Burrow over Lamar for the last 5 years?
For the next 5 years?
Over the last, knowing what you know now based on the draft classes you were mentioning before, the last 3 or 4 years?
Like, I mean, yeah. But you would have slotted, like RJ said, you would slot Burrow higher than Lamar.
I'm just asking, would anyone take Burrow knowing what you know now? All right.
Lamar is just unanimous MVP.
I'm just asking because felt like it was something worth asking.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. You're the guy that just took Joe Burrow, by the way.
Now, but I mean, it is a discussion to have. Now, let's say Lamar Jackson is a free agent and the Bengals can either have him or they could take Joe Burrow. Now, you take Lamar Jackson in that system, you know, with Zach Taylor, or would you take Joe Burrow? I think that's a conversation we need to have because I don't know that Lamar Jackson has as much success in Cincinnati's offense as he had with Baltimore's.
Maybe that's what Ryan was trying to say.
Whatever. I mean, that's on Zach Taylor. That's on him if he can't figure out how to use Lamar Jackson.
Though. Right, right.
For sure, yeah. Okay, moving on. Who is Debo?
Second overall pick, the Washington Redskins and Ryan Wilson select Chase Young, edge, Ohio State.
Is now a good time to point out that I had Chase Young going number 2 overall in my April 2019 look ahead. 12-month look-ahead mock draft. I am a genius. Thing.
No, it's not. But it is time to point out that some moron wanted to buy the team from underneath me and draft Tua Tagovailoa with the number 2 pick, and I refused to sell it. That was also you, by the way. Not this time. yeah, this is a slam dunk. I mean, come on. Joe Burrow's a slam dunk. Chase Young's a slam dunk. Unless you're trading down, it doesn't look anyone's going to trade up. And I think, actually, the market for trade-ups is going to dry up. I don't think there are going to be people trading up. For various reasons, and maybe that's smoke screens, and I'm buying into it. But if you're Ron Rivera, don't. It's easy, man. Just take Chase Young and make the team better.
But here's the counter to that. Like, so it seems like the speculation is some of these smart teams are going to want to trade 2020 picks for 2021 picks, where they can do their normal work on prospects and feel better going into the draft about who they have. So if you're devaluing 2020 picks to that point, wouldn't you be more likely to trade those picks to get up for a particular guy you like, if there is the one guy? Because let's say that if you're the Dolphins and you have, like, you know, you can trade 39 and 70 to get to from 5 to 2 or 3 or whatever. Like, 39 and 70, you're not going to feel as comfortable as you would next year with those picks. It kind of devalues those picks. So the trade chart becomes a little bit, you know, hypothetical in this point, to where this, you got to treat this draft a little different than you would another draft.
Yeah. I mean, the only issue is Tua, and I've said, if you're the Dolphins and you're fine with Tua, draft him, don't have any concerns. But I don't know. Like, once you, I don't know if the Lions going to have a lot of business coming their way, because, the Dolphins can stay put, and if the Chargers love Tua, for example, they can trade up to 4 if Dave Gettleman's interested in doing that. And then Matt Patricia's left there holding his thingamajigger there.
So I think what the Dolphins are doing with all this stupid smoke screening stuff, it's like so transparent, is they're saying that, I think they've embedded themselves and they're saying, all right, we're going to sit at 5 and we are going to just take Tua when he comes to us. We don't think the Redskins are going to trade. And I think if the Redskins trade out of 2 with somebody, I think they do it before the draft. Because, like, are you really going to do that while you're on the clock, like dealing with Dan Snyder and Kyle Smith and Ron Rivera and then 3 other power brokers from the other franchise is trying to move up? Like, I mean, if
all
somebody's
locations.
All the different, like, if somebody, like, you got a 6-person Zoom call, you got 2 Zoom calls, like you're talking to your boss, you're talking to the guy, like, you're negotiating with your own team, and then you got to negotiate with the other team. Like, if you're at 2, you put out feelers and say, listen, we'll do a trade before the draft. Now, conversely, the Lions, you won't see a trade at 3 until they're actually on the clock, because they can't, no one's going to trade to 3 without knowing what happens at 2. I just think the Dolphins are going to try and call, are going to try and, like, they're trying to bluff it into where they can stay at 5 and just take 2 of there. Thoughts, Josh?
No, I think I'm with you. I think all of this Tua stuff is misdirection. It all seems so coincidental that it's coming out of Miami, but at the same time, I think we are kind of subconsciously buying into it, because we're talking about the trade market drying up. We're talking about possibly Miami sitting there at number 5, not having to trade up to get possibly their quarterback of choice. So whether we say we're buying into it or not, I think subconsciously it's kind of working.
Okay, fair enough. Ryan, like, hates Tua now. He loved Tua a week.
No, out of here.
But anyway, I just think the Redskins are going to take Chase Young now. I just don't think they're messing around with it. I think they would like to trade down to 5 for an extra first round pick or maybe 2, but they don't. I just don't think they want to deal with it. I don't think the Dolphins are willing to pay to get up there. So let's go to number 3.
With a 3rd overall pick, the Detroit Lions and Josh Edwards select Jeff Okuda, cornerback, Ohio State.
Yeah, so the conversation started with, am I going to get a call from Miami so they could possibly move up to take a quarterback? As we just discussed, those conversations are not really taking place right now. So I stuck where I was. I took the best player on my board, which was Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. I feel like he's able to step in immediately, replace Darius Slay, who, of course, they traded this offseason. Everybody's saying that if you get rid of Slay, you bring in Okuda, you're not making your team better this year. Yeah, you're not really making your team better this year, but you're shedding some cap space, which gives you some more flexibility in the future. And the idea is that Okuda is going to develop and become a better player than what we've seen from Darius Slay. So this is not a short-term pick that I'm making. This is an invested pick to improve my team for the long term. I think he's the ideal situation that's going to be able to step in and give me the best chance to compete this coming season.
So let me ask you something, Josh. It seems like the cornerback class, there's going to be a lot of value and a lot of picks off the board in that 20 to 40 range at cornerbacks. When you're talking about AJ Terrell, Jalen Johnson, Trayvon Diggs, you know, Christian Fulton, just throw all the names out, Igbinoghene. Is that a consideration you make if you're Detroit? You're saying, hey, I can come and I can get a good cornerback in top of round 2. Maybe I should get a player at a harder to get position in number 3. Isaiah Simmons, you know, is kind of positionless. He can do it all. But I think that's the one guy that maybe they pass on Okuda for, especially if they are comfortable with a guy like Igbinoghene or Jalen Johnson.
Absolutely. I think you have to have that kind of a discussion. There's a lot of linebackers that I like possibly there at the top of the 2nd round as well, but like you mentioned, that's kind of the sweet spot for this cornerback class. I'm not as confident in this cornerback class as a lot of people are. So for me, I felt like the gamble on Okuda was a little bit more enticing than possibly taking Isaiah Simmons, because I may not have the most faith in my coaching staff and their ability to bring that out of him this coming season. So for me, I felt like Okuda was more of the known commodity. he's going to be able to step in right away and contribute to that secondary, which has kind of been decimated in recent years. I mean, they've got to get a guy that's going to come in and make an impact, because you get rid of Quandre Diggs, you get rid of Darius Slay. They need to have a new face in that secondary, and Okuda, I think, is a guy that's not only going to bring a lot of talent, but he's going to help rebuild that secondary. He's a guy that is going to set the tone on the edge for that defense. So I feel pretty confident in my pick.
There was some buzz in league circles about the Dolphins GM in this Pick Six podcast mock draft being a lazy layabout. Did he call you at all when the Lions were on the clock?
Yeah, so that also Josh happens to be me. So I would be dunking on myself in this particular instance. No, I felt like, you know, and I don't want to give too much away. You know, maybe we've got some calls that we're making at this point in time, trying to gauge the trade market. We felt like what Detroit wanted for that third overall pick was a little bit too rich for our blood. We're very confident in the depth of this class. We want to be able to take a number of shots to make this a more successful season for us, because we do feel like we've made strides this offseason. So we wanted to retain as many picks as we possibly could to have more bites at the apple, and we felt like Detroit was just simply asking for too much.
That's a good faith negotiation with yourself. I like it. I've been like, yeah, Miami's moved up to 3 for a 7th-round pick, and Detroit said yes. All right. That means the Giants are on the clock.
And with that being said, there has been a trade, our first trade of the draft.
Oh, breaking news.
R.J. White and the Giants trade out of the number 4 pick and slide back one slot as the Dolphins and Josh Edwards do trade up here. Miami sending number 5 and number 70 to New York in exchange for number 4 and 110. And with that 4th pick, the Dolphins take Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback, Alabama.
I hope someone drafted Noah Igbinogheni just so Devo has to try to
pronounce. Igbinogheni.
RJ and Josh, walk us through this trade. So again, 4th overall plus 110 for Miami's number 5 and Miami's 70th overall pick. Not a really prohibitive price to move up one spot.
Yeah, I'll leave it up to Josh to talk about the Dolphins' edge, and when the Giants are back on the clock, I can take you through their side.
Yeah, so for me, I identified Tagovailoa as the better quarterback prospect, even with the medicals. As the Dolphins general manager, you know, I had some very good intel on Tagovailoa's medicals, so I felt pretty confident. My guys checked him out. He's good. We're ready for him to play this upcoming season. We feel pretty good about it. We didn't have to give up a lot of draft capital. The Giants general manager, RJ, he played some hardball. I was trying to give him the 99th pick at first. He pushed back and said 110. I said, you know what? What's 11 picks when we're able to get the quarterback that we desire? So we move up one pick, trade down essentially from 70 to 110. 40 picks to select the quarterback that you think is going to lead your franchise for the better part of a decade. I'm more than comfortable with that, because I've still got a lot of draft capital. I can make other moves to move around in this, and I'll share some insight into some other conversations that I had hoped to have with some teams throughout this draft. But when you look at Tagovailoa, I feel like his leadership is going to be able to transform the culture in Miami. That's the biggest thing that they need at this point in time. I'm assuming that he's going to be completely healthy. I think that he is healthy and that he's going to be able to lead our franchise for quite some time. So I was comfortable with what I had to give up in order to select the player.
Yeah, he's a health risk, but I mean, everybody's a health risk. It's football. You know, you don't get paid to stand there and not get hit. You know, you got 11 guys coming after you on every play. So you kind of have to take that into a factor. You know, if he does get hurt, people will be like, oh, I told you so. They shouldn't have taken two. Well, we knew he was a health risk. But, you know, nobody has a 0% health risk in this league. Nobody has 100% health risk in this league. You're taking it somewhere in the middle. And maybe Tua's is a little bit elevated, but that's the trade-off you make for a player his caliber.
Yeah, and I'll say one thing. You know, when you're taking a guy like Tua, you have to be conscious of what you plan to do with him in your offense. So I think you do have to have this innate thought process where you're trying to protect him. So for Miami, my strategy at this point becomes we've got to improve our offensive line because we do know his history. At the same time, you know, we're going to design our plays to where we're not going to put him in a position to take unnecessary hits more often than necessary. So that's something that we can do to ensure that this pick has a little bit longer longevity.
and you got a Brian Flores as the coach, you know, longtime New England coach. He's seen how successful you can be when you don't let the quarterback get hit. So he knows that that's a priority. You keep your guy upright and you can have a lot of success.
Yeah, I think too, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Dolphins go Tua and two offensive linemen in the first round. And I think they would be widely praised if they came. And like, you look at how they address things in free agency. I mean, they went out and signed Byron Jones. They signed a bunch of pass rushers. They clearly targeted defense in free agency. I would assume are going to go offense here. RJ, how painful was it for you to put on your Dave Gettleman pants and trade down?
I don't know. Obviously, a lot has been said about he doesn't trade down, and it seems like he wants to this year. I like this trade because
he is lying.
It's a way to trade down, but not really trade down. So you can get people off your back and say, look, I did do the trade down and I improved my pick haul with getting up 40 spots, but you still get the same player because, you know, Miami's not flipping you for anybody but Tua. Right. So you do get to do that and get the people off your back in that sense, but it's not really a major trade down for him.
And like in this case, you just really swapped. Like, you're not even adding an extra pick or an extra player. You're just moving up 40 spots. So I think that there is a very good case to be made that they would do that. Do you think that Miami would actually do this if the Giants get on the clock? Like, do you think if they get to four, do you think that Miami will actually, trade up, or do you think they would just play chicken a little bit longer?
I think they would. I think you have to be worried that someone else is going to come. When you look at the draft chart and how much these picks are valued, like, it drops precipitously from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. So just because the team's not willing to trade up for 3, it's too much, doesn't mean that they don't have the price to get to 4. So you do have to be worried about Jaguars, Chargers, you know, maybe even somebody deeper, Raiders, coming up and getting to if they really like him. And it's not a big price at all.
Do you know how freaking incredible it would be if Thursday night the Giants are on the clock and, like, all of a sudden they cut to Roger Goodell in his basement? He's like, we have a trade to announce. And, like, then you just see the Patriots logo. And, like, Twitter would lose its effing mind if, like, it's like, it's Bill Belichick's music, by God!
And I actually laid out a way it could happen. You know, there is a blueprint where this kind of thing has happened before, and that's the Eagles trading up for Carson Wentz. They moved from 13 to 8, and then they moved from 8 to 2. The way they got to 13 to 8, they didn't trade any picks. They traded two veterans, Kiko Alonso, Byron Maxwell, get to 13 to 8, and then they trade their pick call 8 to 2. I think the Patriots could do a similar thing if they're completely sold on Tua. They could get from 23 to 10 by floating, say, Joe Tooney out to the Browns. Browns need a guard, you know, and they can get, when the Browns go down to 23, they're passing on one of the top tackles, but they supposedly really like Ezra Cleveland, and you can get him at 23. So if you're the Browns, you come out of this draft with Ezra Cleveland and Joe Tooney, you got to be thinking, that's pretty good. You know, we did a good job there. And then at 10, the Patriots can swing around, get to 4 by trading their 2021 first and then one of those third round picks. That's enough to get to that price. So if you're only giving up the 2021 first and then one third round pick to get all the way from 23 to 10 plus, or, and then to 3 plus an asset that you probably don't want to hang on to long term, why not? You know, so if they like Tua, I think the blueprint is there for them.
I don't know what the feeling that I have right now is, but it's a bizarre level of excitement for that possibility. Somebody needs to write an article for CBS Sports tonight. I mean, I'm not going to do it.
Already did on Friday. That was me.
Oh, you wrote it. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
it's quarantine. Friday, I checked out, buddy.
It's quarantine. What, are you not allowed to read the internet?
Yeah, we know you checked out. We were doing a draft with you at that time.
We were doing this draft. Yeah.
What were you doing Friday, by the way, that you couldn't check your email every 45 minutes?
Playing poker.
Yeah, there you go. I appreciate the honesty.
Winning. I've been on a hot streak. Won two tournaments on Saturday. And made the final table in a 51-person tournament.
And at the expense of the three of us here waiting for you to respond.
And my family. Okay. So anyway, that is a fascinating concept with Tua. I want this. I need this. If all of a sudden the Patriots are like, How would that work? Like, would they trade? I think they would have to do it. Would they do it during the draft? So, like,
I would think we see the Tooney trade before, you know, obviously. And then it'd probably be the day of or a day before. And then they're at 10 and then they're working the phones. They probably would have an idea what it would take to get to 3 specifically with Lions, because with their history together with the Lions, or 4. So then you enact that when the guy comes on the clock. Like, say the Giants are like, you know, we'll do it. We like your trade, but we want to make sure Chase Young isn't there. You know, we want to make sure whatever, you know. So if that is the case, then we're going to go ahead and make that deal when we're on the clock at that point.
Because the thing is, like, if the Patriots get to 10 and the, like, if you're New England, you have to be aware that if you get to 10 and the Dolphins find out about it, the Dolphins will then quickly make a move. So, like, you almost want to get to 10. You don't want Miami to know you're at 10 until after the Redskins pick. Cause, like, it would not be surprising at all to me if Matt Patricia traded from 3 to 10. It turned out a better offer from the Dolphins to take whatever his boy Bill Belichick is trying
to do. Right. And this doesn't necessarily have to be announced, you know, as soon as it gets agreed to, you know, if they could kind of keep it in the box, say, if 2 is there at 3, you know, if nobody gets to 2, this is the deal. These are the two deals we're going to make, and have them kind of agreed to, but not actually processed, and then make them both hand in hand. Also, Tooney, why is he not a fit for Detroit also? Detroit needs some guard improvement. Maybe that gets you all the way from 23 to 3 if the Lions are comfortable dropping that far. I doubt they are, but if you get Tooney, 2021 first, an extra third rounder, and then 23, maybe that's something they're comfortable with. I don't know.
I mean, if you're Detroit, not to belabor the point, but I think it's really interesting. Like, if you're Detroit, you should – I would rather have – so at 23, what are you getting? Christian Fulton maybe, or Jalen Johnson?
Yeah, kind of name your guy at that point.
Yeah, but like, all right, let's say 23, you're getting Jalen Johnson. So would you rather have Jeff Okuda or Jalen Johnson, Joe Tooney, and an extra 2021 first-round pick? I mean, it's a no-brainer.
If you're who? The Lions?
Detroit.
Yeah, but who's the coach going to be next year?
Well, I mean, you sell.
You try that stuff, but those guys have had 2 years and they haven't done jack.
You go tell.
What do you have to say about Detroit?
You storm into Stoney's office, say, "Listen, Stoney. You old bird."
Fire. What's her nickname? Stoney. Oh, right.
Stoney. Yeah. Listen, Stoney. Here's the deal. I got an extra 2021 first. I'm gonna shave my beard, lose 10 pounds. We'll be back. We're better than ever. Don't you worry about it.
Stoney's gonna make, look, man, I'm 104 years old. I don't have time to wait for you with all these excuses. Get me Jim Caldwell on the phone.
I think the other part of that too is, regardless of who is the quarterback of the Patriots, you feel pretty confident they're going to be picking in the 20s or higher next year too. So, I mean, that's going to factor into the equation. This isn't like, pick a team, Arizona, Jacksonville. This isn't like one of those teams.
Well, it's like the trade that Houston made with Cleveland to go up and get Deshaun, and then, you know, takes ACL and they give up a top five pick. I mean, it's right. It's probably not going to be that. I don't know. I want this to happen so free. I mean, it will be if we get it's Belichick's music all of a sudden, he's on the clock at 3 with Tua sitting there. Like, every single person who's been banging this, Tua's not healthy. If Belichick trades up against Tua, like, you know Tua's healthy.
And you know that's Belichick's going to have more comfort with taking Tua than another team would with his relationship with Saban. So a lot of this team, you're falling back when you can't actually go and see all these players and get medicals and everything. You're falling back on your existing relationships. So when you're building these mock drafts, or when we're kind of reflecting on what happened during the actual draft, you can kind of say, well, this makes sense because so-and-so worked for Saban, you know, in 2015. So he would feel comfortable taking this pick because of that, and just kind of taking those relationships to the next level. Since we know Belichick and Saban are close, kind of is a fit, you know, maybe he's more comfortable taking Tua than Miami would be.
Okay. I don't know where the hell we are in this draft, so Debo, do something.
A lot of time between picks there. Now with the fifth pick after that trade, RJ and Dave Gettleman and the Giants select Jedrick Wills, offensive tackle, Alabama.
Yeah, it could be any tackle at this spot with the Giants. I think I was just saying about the connection. The Alabama connection is there with Joe Judge. He spent 3 years in Tuscaloosa, so he has that familiarity. I think he knows how Wills would fit in with the Giants. It feels like the high floor guy of the four tackle options. It seems like all the other guys represent a little bit of downside. Wills, I think you're going to lock in. You're going to get a high floor guy who's a very good starter at the very least. And you know, he can step in and start on day one, possibly switch to left tackle down the road if you need him to. I think he has that capability as well. But, this is at least a B+ pick, you know, you're making if you're the Giants, and you couple that with getting extra draft capital in that trade down. Why not?
For sure. Do By the way, Mel Kiper said he thinks the Patriots could, quote, be aggressive. Do we buy into Mel Kiper for Tua if he starts to slip at all? Do we buy – like, I'm not disparaging Mel Kiper in any sense. I'm just wondering, like, is that a report or is he – you know what I mean? Like, it feels like that might just be him sort of talking on, like, yeah. He's – I mean, look, like Ryan Wilson, you know, it's draft season. You're a hot bag of gas all month long. Just blah, 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 blah. Just spewing opinions. The same with Kiper.
I don't think the Patriots are going to be in the Tua business. I think there may be some concerns with Tua, not just health concerns. So we'll see, but I don't know what Mel Kiper, whether he knows something or he doesn't. I did find it interesting when he got super angry about the Joe Burrow most recent stuff. I didn't know what it was, that people were angry about Joe Burrow doing something, and Mel Kiper was fired up about disparaging the great city of Cincinnati. So that's my lasting takeaway of Mel Kiper the last week or so, not anything about the Patriots. I just don't think they're going to be in the Tua business.
All right, Debo, we got Ryan Wilson and the Ryan Wilson, aka Tommy Telesco, with his 17 screens on the kitchen table on the clock.
And they select Isaiah Simmons, linebacker, safety, punter, quarterback, wide receiver, every position on the field from Clemson.
Yeah, so the Dolphins didn't need to trade up. We're not interested in Tua, and we're clearly not interested in Justin Herbert. We're going with Isaiah Simmons. I'm going to, like I keep saying, I'm going to will this into existence. I want to see how good this defense can be and take that along with our ball control offense, starring Tyrod Taylor and Anthony Lynn, and see what the Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have in store for those two meetings a year. We'll circle back in round two, get a running back. And we're going to run the ball 4,000 times next year.
I mean, I'm starting to think this is the plan.
Yeah, I bet they need a quarterback. I would wish we could say it. I don't know why they don't sign Cam Newton because he could start.
But you wait until after, is it? I think it's May 1st, and it doesn't count against the compensatory pick formula.
Oh, I should be concerned about competition, but I guess no one else cares about Cam Newton either right now.
Yeah, Cam wouldn't count to the compensatory pick formula because he wasn't a free agent. Once the league year started, he was cut, so.
Jameis Wood, though.
Jameis Wood.
Jameis Winston, not Jameis Wood.
I can't imagine you let Phillip Rivers leave and then sign Jameis Winston, even as a backup.
That's disrespectful.
You got to do something at this point. I mean, obviously Brady was in the mix. You know, they seem to be one of the two finalists for Brady. And when he didn't pick you, then you got to have a plan B.
I will say that whatever, like Tom Telesco, what he has done by allowing this depth chart to materialize the way it has for the Chargers, it's so obvious that they need a quarterback that everyone is mocking one to them. And it's almost like too obvious. Like if you wanted a quarterback at number six, whether it's Justin Herbert or Jordan Love or Tua Tagovailoa, whoever it is, like you should fill out your depth chart and throw some misdirection there, right?
Yeah, you could say you could see it happening, but you know, they're a very slow, plodding, methodical team. They have their plan in place, and if that plan is a quarterback, we'll find out on Thursday. And if it's not a quarterback, if it's signed one, you know, we'll find that out a little bit after that.
We could talk or not talk for hours. That's a Best in Show reference.
Oh God, when was the last time you saw that?
I don't know, a few years. Great show. All right, Debo.
We have another trade.
What?
Another trade.
I made the trade.
Will Brinson and the Panthers swapped the 7th overall pick with the Falcons and R.J. White in exchange for 16, 78, and a 2021 second rounder. And with that 7th pick, R.J. and the Falcons take C.J. Henderson, cornerback, Florida.
Mm. Yeah, this is the price that the Titans paid to move from 15 to 8 for Conklin. It was the 3rd round pick, the future 2nd round pick, and then number 15 to get to 8. So this is a little bit further of a jump, but we paid the same price, so we got to feel good about that value. It's a big move here, but we know Thomas Dimitroff isn't scared of big moves. You know, that Julio move all the way up the board paid off. Traded up for Trufant, traded up for Tack McKinley, traded up last year for McGarry.
It's not even that he's not afraid of him. He, like, loves a big move up.
He seeks them out. Yeah. So there is a lot of buzz building that the Falcons are looking to jump into the top 10 for Henderson. That's like the biggest connection, I think, as far as smoke has materialized in the last week or so, and I'm completely buying it. He fits the need they have. He's an excellent man cover player. Some teams reportedly think he's the cornerback one over Okuda. I don't think any of us would go that far, but you could see some teams buying in to be like, all right, this guy is our CB1, and if the Falcons are one of those teams, you could see them making this big move up the board because he ain't going to be there at 16.
From my perspective, I think if I recall correctly, I was on the – oh, so the lack of Justin Herbert in the first six picks kind of threw a wrench in my plans. I didn't love the idea. I mean, Derek Brown, I guess I could have gone with there, or even C.J. Henderson or one of the tackles. I honestly contemplated taking a wide receiver for Carolina. Felt a little bit redundant. And ultimately, like, you know, R.J. – offered me a chance to move down nine spots and I get a second round pick next year, which if the Falcons, crater this season for any reason, that's a pretty nice pick. And then add a top, 80 pick. So I pretty sure too, like I was out of the house when RJ made the offer and, unprepared to make a selection. And so really just took the first offer. I don't think I hardballed you at all.
No, I don't think so.
but I will also say, like, RJ makes fair and reasonable offers. Like, he's not gonna, like, he's not like lowballing me. You know, like Dave Richard during our mock draft call is like, I got a third round pick in 2022. It's like, it's a one. No, like, absolutely not. Okay.
So I knew he was dealing with the Freddie Kitchens of general manager, so he didn't have
Bill O'Brinson.
Yeah. How dare you, Ray? Hey,
Freddie O'Brinson. There you go.
Billy O'Brinson. Okay, so RJ back on the clock with the Cardinals, Devo.
Back-to-back picks for RJ. At number 8, he selects Tristan Wirfs, offensive tackle, Iowa.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my my airtime early. If we have to cut this off early, at least I've been the star of this podcast at this point. I think it makes the most sense for the Cardinals with his athleticism. He blazed a 4.85 at the combine. He can get upfield and help break big plays, which are going to happen with Kyler Murray running around out there. You start him at right tackle, just like Wills. You can move him to left tackle down the road. If he winds up not living up to the hype at tackle and he just doesn't quite fit there, I think he'd be excellent inside at guard. So it's a great backup plan for you to have a fantastic guard at worst case scenario at this point. So 4.8, you protect Kyler, you get an athletic tackle to stick there at the right side, and let's go. Let's have a really great offense this year.
I will just throw out that I would not be stunned if the Cardinals took Derek Brown there. Just throwing that out there. What about Ryan Wilson on the clock with the Jaguars?
And he does select Derek Brown, defensive tackle, Auburn.
So the question here was not even quarterback. We're not interested in Justin Herbert. Do we want the third best offensive tackle or the best defensive tackle? So we want Derek Brown. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. On to pick 20. That's what the Jaguars pick again.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with your Derek Brown analysis earlier, too, that I think he could be in play for the Cardinals. I think the prop on him is 8.5. I wouldn't mind taking the under there and thinking that he could go to Carolina or the Cardinals. And then worst case is 9. So I don't think he has a very, I've seen some mocks where he slips, 13, 15, somewhere around there. But I think top 9 is kind of where his floor is at this point.
Also, too, when you're looking at Derek Brown, so like I was talking to Jason Lockenfora on his radio show in Baltimore on 105.7 The Fan. And, he thinks the Panthers, if they stay at 7, will ultimately just decide, assuming Tua is not there, we'll probably just decide between Isaiah Simmons and Derek Brown. So if Simmons is gone, it's very, and like Brown is a pretty, maybe I'm wrong. Feels like Derek Brown is like a nice seeing eye single for a first year head coach, who, and Matt Rhule who's coming in. Like you take Derek Brown, you're not going to get, like, he doesn't have to have 15 sacks next year. It's just the position where he plays. He's not going to be overly scrutinized. And so it helps you against a run. I mean, does that seem fair?
No one yelled at Dave Gettleman about the Dexter Lawrence pick. They yelled at him about the Daniel Jones pick. And Dexter Lawrence actually had a pretty good season. He was 16th, I think is where they took him.
I loved 18th, but I love Dexter Lawrence. Okay. On the clock at 10, Josh Edwards and the Browns.
Yeah, Josh making this pick a lifelong dream, I think, for this Cleveland fan. He takes Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle, Georgia.
Yeah, I'm going to take Thomas. I'm going to have him wear number 73 so we can bring a lot of those old jerseys out of retirement. And we're feeling pretty good about it. He was our top tackle option. He's played tackle his entire career at Georgia, so we feel really confident that he's at least going to be a double into the gap. Hopefully a home run as well, but we feel really confident that he's going to be able to protect the blind side for Baker Mayfield, give him a little bit more time, which we did not see this past year. I mean, if you look at their depth chart after Greg Robinson's release, they don't have an offense. They don't have a left tackle on the roster. I mean, you could put Kendall Lamb there. You could put Chris Hubbard there. both of whom have been spotty at the right tackle position, so you couldn't possibly move them to the left side and feel confident. Andrew Thomas is a need pick, but he's a value pick as well, because I think the talent matches the pick here at number 10 overall.
Would you prefer this, Josh, or would you prefer second rounder for Trent Williams?
I would prefer this because they've already got a lot of money tied up into Joel Bitonio, Jack Conklin, J.C. Treader. So there's a lot of money tied into that offensive line unit. I think you almost need to, in a sense, go bargain shopping to get a guy like Thomas, who is not going to cost as much against the cap, which, as we know, the cap is going to expand probably next year or the following year for sure. But we know the cap is going to expand, but you also have to pay Myles Garrett. You've got to pay Denzel Ward here in a couple of years. I mean, there's some contracts coming due. Yeah,
probably have to pay Baker.
Yeah, so take that in mind. You have to make that decision with those contracts in the back of your mind. So for me, I feel much more confident in Andrew Thomas coming in. I think I'm going to get a really good player and not have to pay the premium that I would if I was making a trade with Washington.
Any thoughts about taking Justin Herbert there?
Nope.
I was going to ask the same thing.
Any thoughts?
Not even a little bit. I still feel like Baker, if you get him in the right situation, he's very much a rhythmic thrower. So if you get him into this bootleg, you know, Kevin Stefanski, Gary Kubiak style offense running through Nick Chubb, I feel like that's a perfect fit for him. You've got Odell Beckham Jr., you know, running down the field. I feel like that's a good match. I've felt that optimistic in the past before. So, and it's bit me. I mean, everybody is aware that Cleveland had high expectations going into this past season and completely fell on their face. So I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, the Browns are Andrew Thomas away from making a Super Bowl run. I don't think that at all. I'm not going to say that at all until they appear in a Super Bowl, because they have proven me wrong so many times. So I'm going to say that Andrew Thomas is the best fit for us now and also for the next decade.
How do you feel about that trade I proposed earlier, 23 and Tooney for 10, and then you go down and get Cleveland probably?
Yeah, I don't hate it because I do love Joe Tooney, but at the same time, you're putting a lot of money into that right guard position. Assuming they're confident in Jack Conklin, you would think left tackle, left guard with Joel Bitonio, J.C. Treader at center, Jack Conklin at right tackle. You're feeling pretty confident in that unit, even if right guard is probably not on the same level as those guys. So I probably would not feel comfortable giving another big contract to that player, because we do know that Joe Tooney is going to want a big deal. I mean, he's playing on the franchise tag, so you're going to have to pay him as well. So I love Joe Tooney, the player, but I think the cost of doing business is just a little bit too high in this regard.
What about if a player is Dante Hightower?
That would be savage by Belichick.
I mean, I think he's in the last year of his deal coming up, and we know the history with Belichick is he gets rid of a guy 1 year too early instead of 1 year too late. So, you know, you look at all the trades the Patriots have made at the time, we'd have been like, whoa, you know, why did they do this deal? He's still a good player. And, you know, with who they have left at linebacker, I don't see it happening, because they don't have much behind Hightower. But if they have their eyes set on Tua, and as Josh is saying, the Browns don't want Tooney, I mean, that could be a piece to dangle there to get to 10. So we don't know what Josh thinks about that.
Yeah, again, it's just a personal preference. I mean, Dante Hightower is not old, but he's not the youngest player either. I feel pretty confident, actually, in being able to get a quality linebacker on day two. With my second-round pick, I've also got 2 third-round picks. So I feel pretty confident I can get a good player there with one of those 3 picks.
And you got 2 last year in the draft.
I think
the Browns, if the Patriots called and offered 23 and Tooney for 10, I think the Browns would do that, because you know, you don't want to get out of 10, but like, you're taking to win in 2020 for Cleveland, for Kevin Stefanski and, for Andrew Berry. If you have a winning season, you win 9 plus games, you have all the cachet in the world with Jimmy and D Haslam. Like, you will have essentially given yourself a 5-year extension. Because, like, if you go 5-11 2 years in a row, they're probably going to fire you. That's just what they do. They have no patience. But, like, if you get his ear and you get a solidified voice managing things in Cleveland, and you win, and I think they have to know that, and Tooney represents a much better chance, in my opinion, of winning in 2020 than gambling on whatever, you know, tackle you're talking about at 10.
Yeah, the counterpoint to that is, if you do become overly aggressive and it doesn't work out, then it's going to bite you in the butt. So And you got to look at it from both perspectives.
What's that, Ryan?
Sorry, Josh. And the Patriots, by virtue of you trading down, have already gotten a ton better. So you've actually made the Patriots better, and you blew it on the 23. They get Tua? What are you making a face about? I mean, the Patriots trading up to get Tua in a post-Tom Brady world, which part of me thinks, I wonder if the 31 other teams are going to collude to not answer any phone calls from the Patriots. Because
I mean, the 31 other teams have been, like, failing miserably to collude right. with the Patriots for 20 years. I mean, it's, I don't think they're going to start now.
Your time is now.
The time is now for the 11th pick, and that is me. Who do I take, Devo?
And you are taking Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver, Alabama.
So I personally prefer CeeDee Lamb over Jerry Jeudy. I would use a top three pick on CeeDee Lamb if I were somebody running a football team. I love CeeDee Lamb with all of my heart. But I think that Jerry Jeudy is a better fit for what Adam Gase does in his offense than CeeDee Lamb in this case. So we're going with the precise route runner in Jerry Jeudy, explosive speed. Can beat press man coverage. You know, you've seen him do it at the highest level. He's going to get open. He's like, he gives you what Jamison Crowder gives you in terms of, you know, being able to get open underneath and be a great target for a young quarterback, but also can be an elite wide receiver. I would be extremely surprised if Jerry Jeudy, does not have 1,200 yards within his first two seasons.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and the opportunity will be there because it's not like they have a ton else at the Jets. You know, who else are you going to rely on if you're Sam Darnold? If I'm Sam Darnold, you give me Jerry Jeudy. I'm throwing him the ball 150 times. Like, that's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yep, I agree. Raiders on the clock.
So Will, I think this is a spot where your wife on her birthday gets to find out again that CeeDee Lamb is, in fact, a real football player who played wide receiver for Oklahoma, and he's going to the Raiders and R.J. White.
Yeah, we would have liked to get C.J. Henderson here, but we'll settle for our wide receiver one. Versatile number one receiver. Yards per catch ability will fit well with the QBs they have there, especially if it's going to still be Derek Carr. So I think that he's a great fit for what they want to do. He can also be physical when he needs to be. He can be in the red zone game plan. He's not a guy that's going to dominate between the 20s, and then you got to go somewhere else. You know, he'll get you some touchdowns too. So I think he's a complete package for a team that needs a bona fide wide receiver one after the Antonio Brown stuff didn't work out last year. So this kind of fills that hole in our offense.
That CeeDee Lamb tweet of mine feels like it was 42 years ago. It was in December 28th, 2019. Every time my wife sees CeeDee Lamb, she's like, that's CeeDee Lamb. There he is. So yeah, I love CeeDee Lamb.
I'm on that train too. I think he's a perfect fit, and he's what they need. You know, when you're leaning on Darren Waller as your top receiving option, something's gone horribly wrong for your passing game.
Yes, you are. All right. You know what? Take a quick break. And when we come back, Debo will announce another exciting draft day trade.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so we're coming back with a trade. The 49ers and Will Brinson are moving back two picks as the Broncos and Josh Edwards move up, sending the 15th and 118th picks San Francisco's way. And with that 13th pick, the third straight wide receiver comes off the board as the Broncos select Henry Ruggs, another wide receiver from Alabama.
Yeah, I was starting to sweat. I see Jerry Jeudy coming off the board. I see CeeDee Lamb coming off the board. Henry Ruggs has been my target for quite some time. I think he's a perfect complement for Cortland Sutton, Noah Fant. You get this guy that's going to be able to expand the field vertically, but also work underneath and open up some lanes for those guys as well. So for me, Ruggs was my top priority. I didn't know if San Francisco was interested in him themselves. But I also know that Philadelphia is lying in the weeds looking for a number one wide receiver. I didn't know if they were making calls to trade up. So I was confident in my pick. I moved up. I did what I had to do to select Henry Ruggs, and I'm feeling really good about my offense. Now I'm going to come back. I'm going to work on my offensive line and make sure that Drew Lock has a successful second season.
Broncos also have a lot of pay. I think they have 3 third-rounders. So if this is the price they have to pay to get their guy, you know, they've addressed a lot of their needs this offseason already. You pay that price because you already have a ton of guys you're adding to the roster anyway.
Do you think, I mean, 118 is not that expensive to move up two spots for Ruggs. I would have liked to get more if I'm San Francisco. You know, not to spoil it, but, you know, but anyway, I get a little bit more, but like, I think San Francisco would love to try and get, add another top 100 pick, but because they have, 2 first-round picks and then I think nothing until the 5th round. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're Kyle Shanahan and, how am I drawing a blank on the Hall of Fame, John Lynch, Hall of Fame GM, who's just in the Super Bowl. If you're those guys, I think you almost like have to just get something in those rounds. Like you can't, I mean, coming away with two first rounders would be great, but I would not be surprised at all. If you set the over under of trades at 2.5 on Thursday night for the 49ers, I would consider taking the over. Certainly take the over at 1.5.
In a regular draft, I would agree with you, but we just don't know how the virtual scenario is going to play out, how comfortable teams are going to be with trading up and down, how comfortable they're going to be with giving up some of these top 100 picks. Because once you get outside the top 100, considering the work that people haven't been able to do with these prospects, you know, good luck on day 3 at this point.
I don't know if you put it in the article, I didn't read it because we're podcasting, but could 13 be a spot for the Patriots, like a launching pad, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know that the 49ers have as much cap space to make it work. Browns are one of the top teams in cap space, which is why I zeroed in on them for 10.
I was thinking like the Patriots are like, hey, look, we'll give you – because the Patriots don't have a second because they traded it for Mo Sanu, but they're like –
it'd be like 87. Yeah, I mean that's probably – they probably have to give up 2/3. I don't know if they're willing to pay that price. They might have to give up a future pick. I don't know if they're willing to pay that price. So, you know, it seems a little bit high for me. I had a mock, I believe in my 7-round mock, I had the Vikings coming up to 13 and being the team to make it happen because there's one tackle left on the board, and I think tackle could be a need for the Vikings to try to get that left side locked down or even the right side and move Brian O'Neill over because he had a good year and just, you know, get rid of Riley Reiff and upgrade that offensive line for Kirk Cousins. So I think the Vikings could be a team to look at now that they have 2 first-rounders and a 2nd-rounder and some other picks. But I don't know about the Patriots.
You don't think the Patriots would be like, hey, listen, we're going to cash in that IOU on the Jimmy G deal. So here's a 3rd-rounder. We're coming up to 13, and you could have 23 too.
Now, I think the Patriots, if they're trading up and it's not, you know, super high for Tua, they're probably looking in the 16, 17, 18 range and paying 1/3 to get into that range instead of all the way up to 13.
All right. Ryan Wilson on the clock.
And he selects Mekhi Becton, offensive tackle, Louisville.
For the Buccaneers.
Yeah, for the Buccaneers. We were sweating. We didn't know if once the Broncos traded up, they're going to come up and get an offensive tackle because they certainly have needs there. Garrett Bowles hasn't quite worked out, but apparently they're comfortable enough that they prefer to have senior Ruggs. So we're going with Mekhi Becton because we need some offensive line protection for old Tommy T there, Tommy Brady. The thing is, Mekhi Becton has played left tackle for the last few years in Louisville, but he started as a right tackle. So he has that ability. Maybe it's not something he can do immediately, but he can start out at right tackle, kick over to left tackle where was dominant last year. And he probably won't play as long as Tom Brady because Tom Brady will play into his 60s, but he could have a good 10-year run, and we feel great that we didn't have to trade up and get an offensive tackle.
Feels like a slam dunk that the Bucs take a tackle if they're up there.
So what happens if all 4 are off the board? Let's say that 3 go in the top 10 and the Jets go tackle at 11. You know, what do you do if you're the Bucs?
So that messes up the old game plan because ideally you wouldn't trade up because they have the 1st, 2nd, 3rd-round picks and you would have an offensive tackle fall to you. I don't know if you would reach for Josh Jones at 14. He had a really good season at Houston, had a really good Senior Bowl, even better Senior Bowl than season, you could argue. So you may think about going defensive tackle. Jamon Kinlaw is still there, and because what you want to do, which means – so if you go Javon Kinlaw because the tackle's gone, then that messes up your plan to get, say, a wide receiver in the 2nd or 3rd round and then a running back in the 2nd or 3rd round because that would just basically round out that offense and put you on par on paper anyway with what the Saints could do. But if you have to take Javon Kinlaw, then in round 2 you have to think about which tackles do you like there, whether it's Isaiah Wilson, whether it's Ezra Cleveland, should he fall, Austin Jackson, whomever. And then round three, maybe you get best player between the running backs and wide receivers that remain. So I don't know if I would trade up if I'm the Buccaneers. It just depends on how the rankings go from your offensive tackles from four and the subset underneath that, how far, what the difference is.
The Buccaneers utilize O.J. Howard to move up.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know that he has that much trade value because they're trying to get rid of him, it seems, at this point. So I don't think he's going to get you like to 7 or 8, you know. Might get you a couple spots up.
Yeah, he'll get you from 14. He'll get you down to 18 if you try to include him.
So it's like the Patriots give up 23 for 14 and O.J. Howard.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah, a couple outside the box. Like, could they be a receiver team in the first round? Like, say Lamb is the only one off the board. Like, I think Jerry Jeudy, the odds on him going to the Bucs are 40-1. But, I mean, I would play that because this is an offense where you're going to have to pay Chris Godwin next year. If you do, can you keep both him and Mike Evans on huge contracts? I don't know if that can happen. So do you want that affordable, you know, number one, number two, just great guy to have continuity in the offense? And a lot has been made about protecting Tom Brady. That's how you make the offense better. Just give him more weapons, too. I mean, after what he went through in New England, he's going to be like, give me all the weapons you can get. So I don't think he would hate Jerry Jeudy at 14 at all, a guy that good. So I think they might be a sleeper team for a receiver since these receivers are projected to go in that 11 to 15 range, but nobody really projects any of them to go to Tampa. And if the board just happens to slip, so even if there is a tackle on the board, who says that they like that guy? I mean, they might have plus grades on two guys or three guys. And if you just leave them one left, they just might be, yeah, we don't want that guy. Let's go somewhere else.
No, that's a good point. And look, like Henry Ruggs was 6-1 to be the first receiver off. He's now down to 2.5-1. I mean, it's possible the Jets just take Ruggs, you know? Like, I don't think, like, do you think there's a chance Ruggs goes over Jeudy?
Yeah, teams prize speed. You know, Josh was talking about how his fit in that offense to where he stretches the field, that also helps a young quarterback because that brings the safety out of the play more. So you don't have to worry about, you know, what the safety's doing as much if you know he's taken out over the top with a guy like Ruggs. So you could see him helping out an offense with a young quarterback there. So I think it's possible. I don't think I would do it. I don't think most people would do it. Jeudy's a more complete player. Lamb is a higher upside, more dynamic player. And Ruggs, I think, is kind of the third guy.
Okay. All right, Debo. We have any breaking news?
Oh, this is the Brinson part of the draft. Just a certified wheeler and dealer, or he was just playing poker and didn't give a chance.
Two handsome GMs locked in a battle. That's what they'll give up in a trade.
So the 49ers had the 15th pick, and Brinson had the 15th pick after moving back. Now they're moving back two spots again. In a trade with himself, the Cowboys send 17 and 123 up for number 15, and with that 15th pick, they select Xavier McKinney, safety, Alabama.
You gotta be a real asshole to trade with yourself in a mock draft.
Can you say that?
Can you say that during the draft?
Maybe. You can believe it.
Yeah, more work.
Jerry would say it.
Jerry Jones would say it,
yeah. You gotta be a real mosquito, a circumcised mosquito to trade with yourself during the draft. I find bleeps of cuss words, unexpected bleeps, to be the funniest thing in the world. I don't know why. Like they always, like I was watching Arrested Development. You know, like they're talking about the toothpaste and she's like, the glisten, always that glisten. And it just cracks me up. Look, I think San Francisco wants to move down and accumulate as many picks as possible. At 15, you know, when we flipped with, the Broncos and they took Ruggs, it sort of threw a wrench in the plans. CJ Henderson's already off the board, so he didn't really want to go cornerback here. And you know, Dallas is willing to give up 123, which isn't a lot, but it is another pick, and the 49ers need more picks just to move down two spots. The Dallas Xavier McKinney thing is like strongly connected. I feel like they might go in a different direction, but I don't know. I didn't, it just felt like a thing to do. An Alabama safety. Why not?
Yeah, I think if a team's trading up here, it might be for one of these falling quarterbacks. I don't know that it's for McKinney. Some people are projecting McKinney falls out of the first round. So I don't know that you have to trade up to get him if you're Dallas at 17.
Oh, and again, like I'm San Francisco and Justin Herbert and Jordan Love are out there and you B-holes just wouldn't make me an offer to come up to 15. Like, I made it very clear that I will take the best offer possible. Like, or just throw me a bone. I had to trade with myself to move down. I should have traded up with, I'm the Saints GM. I should have moved up with the Saints and grabbed Justin Herbert or Jordan Love, which, by the way, we'll get to, but those guys are dropping precipitously. Good Lord. I have three straight picks. Yeah. This is really where it bottled next. So let's go to 16th, Eva.
So you're on the clock again, and with that 16th pick, it's the Panthers selecting because they traded down previously from number 7. With that 16th pick, it's Javon Kinlaw, defensive lineman, South Carolina.
I mean, feel great about this. Javon Kinlaw, surprising drop. Get him at 16. Maybe this is the range for him, but, Panthers wanted Isaiah Simmons originally. The draft, Justin Herbert didn't go in the top 6, so Carolina was able to nab Kinlaw, another one of our top, prospects on the board. I will say this. I heard, Brian Brodius, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, who used to work for the Cowboys on 105.3 The Fan the other day. And he said that a lot of teams are starting to get nervous about injuries for Kinlaw. Not just his knee, but I think he also said his hip. And so he made it sound like it is even a remote possibility that Kinlaw might not go in the first round, buy or sell.
It's possible. I mean, anything's possible at this point. We just don't know. And if there is that hesitation there because of medicals, who knows what's going to happen. I would think that one of these teams with multiple first round picks would take him at some point. If the Jags don't get Derek Brown at 9, I would think they take him at 20, even with the issue with the medicals, because that's your second first round pick at that point. Maybe the Vikings take him at 25. That's your second first round pick at that point. 31 for the Niners, if they don't trade down, that seems to kind of be the floor for me. But maybe it happens. Who knows?
Brian?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think just the talent there. Of course, I mean, we talked about Juwan Taylor last year, the right tackle of the Jaguars, and he slipped around too. And there were some lingering issues about a knee injury. I believe there was some injury-related thing that saw him slip. It can certainly happen. I haven't heard anything about that, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Because people will argue that Kinlaw, in terms of projecting him, could be better than Derek Brown. And that's, that's pretty high praise.
The guy I always think about when we talk about injury drops, TJ Clemmings, who was drafted by the Vikings in 2015 in the 4th round. He was projected, he was a first rounder in a lot of mocks. And this happens, he just sort of reminds me, this happens almost every year. There's a guy that we have as this, built out into the mock structure. And then all of a sudden it's like he drops out of the first round. It's like, well, that's very surprising. And you start to get buzzed throughout the draft process, the days of the draft, that it's injury related. Somebody tweets it out, et cetera. I don't think Kinlaw will drop that far. I just wonder.
Sure. Happened with Maurice Hurst. Maurice Hurst had a heart issue at the combine.
Yeah,
got reported. He went from being a first round pick to, I think, a 5th round pick. And finally, guy that talented, you take a shot at him at that point, obviously, and it's worked out for him so far.
Yeah.
Malik McDowell too.
What's that?
Malik McDowell too. I think he had some injuries. I think he was the one that had the ATV injury or something. I think that was him, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a great point on Maurice Hurst, RJ. Okay. Next up.
To end this run of 3 picks in a row for Brinson, with the 17th pick in the 49ers finally selecting after trading back from 13 and 15, they select Justin Jefferson, wide receiver, LSU.
I'll be honest. I feel like I sort of botched this as the 49ers GM. I could have had Henry Ruggs at 13, and instead I got Justin Jefferson with and added 118 and 123. I don't love going with a wide receiver here, but I didn't want to go. I thought about Josh Jones. I would have loved, again, for one of you B-holes to call me and trade with me to come up and just get Justin Herbert, but nobody would do it. I don't know. What would the grade be for this Justin Jefferson pick?
I don't hate it. If you don't love Henry Ruggs, and if you want to have someone to have success in your offense, have them go to Kyle Shanahan offense. And you could argue that Justin Jefferson is more polished than Henry Ruggs. He didn't run a 4.27. He ran a 4.43. He actually ran faster than he plays, but he's out of the slot. And I would imagine Shanahan will find a million ways to use him. And if Jimmy G has any sort of chemistry with Justin Jefferson that Joe Burrow had, that makes him a better player. I mean, there's no guarantee Henry Ruggs can come out there right away and start blowing people away. You just don't know when you talk about guys who are just sheer speed demons, and I know that Henry Ruggs does more than that, but you can look down. We talked about this at the combine. The list of guys who ran in the 4.2s, and that translated to NFL success, is like Randy Moss. Yeah. Maybe Julio Jones ran. I don't think he ran the 4.2s, though. But,
he had a broken foot at the combine.
Yeah, that would have been impressive. But Randy Moss, and then you have some questions after that. I don't hate this trade. And you got a couple picks. You don't have a ton of picks as the 49ers.
Yeah, I like the trade better if you do it once and then you take Kinlaw at 15. Then I think you're getting an A grade for that. You pick up an extra pick, you get the guy you probably would have took at 13 anyway. And then people are being like, oh yeah, great, great move. Now let's see what they do at 31. You know, do they trade back again?
Josh, grade?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Justin Jefferson's. I have been for a while. So I think, you know, he's a really great player. If you're able to move back four slots, pick up a couple extra, you know, mid-round picks, still get a player of his caliber. I know it's a little bit earlier than maybe some project, but I'm happy with the value there. I think it's a good pick.
Okay. You guys are just being nice to me. All right. On the clock.
I'm not happy about it.
What?
No, yeah. I'm happy about being nice to you, but I don't hate it.
Yeah. He's a stud out of the slot. The Dolphins on the clock at 18 here.
Yes. And someone besides Brinson finally gets to pick, and that's Josh picking for the Dolphins. After selecting Tua earlier at 18, the Dolphins get Josh Jones, offensive tackle, Houston.
So a little bit into my thought process here. I was initially thinking Ke'Lavon Chaisson from LSU. And then I examined some of the contracts that I don't know what I was doing. You know, when free agency took place, I just was handing out money left and right. So I gave Kyle Van Noy a big contract. I gave Shaq Lawson a contract. I don't really know what I was doing in that circumstance. I probably should have waited and taken a guy like Chaisson at this point. But for me, I need to solve the left tackle position. It's been a huge issue since they let Larry Bietunzel go and trade last year. They got rid of Juwan James a year earlier. So they have to improve their offensive line, especially with Tua under center now. So you have got to make some strides along the offensive line unit. And I think Josh Jones may be a slight reach in the minds of some. But for me, I feel comfortable securing a prospect that I know can grow and develop with my young team and become an even better offensive line here in a couple of years.
Cool. I think it's the play. I think they're going to go 2 at 5 and an alignment at 18. I just think, and maybe another lineman at 26. I just think that's, you look at what they've done, and then you don't buy into this BS smokescreen they're putting out. That's just how it's going to play out, in my opinion.
Josh, do you have a what would your preference be? Would you take Josh Jones here in 2 at 5, or would you prefer your top tackle, Andrew Jones, if that's your guy, at 5, and then Herbert? Just assuming he's going to be available like he is here, Herbert or Love, whichever one your guy is. So which pair do you think is better in a bubble?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting, thought-provoking exercise there. I would probably still take Tua because I know that he's the better prospect between the two of them. You're obviously taking a gamble on his medicals, but I still feel really confident in him as a player. I would feel more confident taking him and then having a guy like Josh Jones, who I know has the athleticism and is going to need to be able to develop on the edge. But at the same time, I feel more confident in his upside with Tua Tagovailoa as my quarterback than I would taking, you know, let's say Jedrick Wills, because he went one pick later to the Giants in this exercise. I would feel better with Tua and Josh Jones simply because I think you have to get the quarterback position solved first, and I feel more comfortable with Tua.
By the way, at this point of the draft, ABC, ESPN, NFL Network, who are all showing the draft, but you can watch our coverage on CBS Sports HQ, of course, including a hour before the draft starts, me hosting a show. I assume Ryan will be on there as well. Super Friends will be holding it down. But at this point on ESPN and NFL Network, it is basically a live feed of Justin Herbert's house.
Every commercial break, they're going into it. They're flipping over like, now take a look at Justin Herbert, you know?
And it's like,
is he on the phone with anyone?
But, and remember, like, this is not a green room situation, so we can't have like the Aaron Rodgers debacle or the Brady Quinn situation. You know, this would be a case where like Justin Herbert is like you're in your living room and you've got a Skype cam because you think you're going to be a top five pick, and all of a sudden it's freaking 18, and like the, and for the Dolphins, you're like, oh my god, good thing we didn't trade up for Tua. Like Herbert's falling this far. I mean, all of a sudden it's like, can you leave the living room? What do you do?
You unplug the camera. Done and done.
you go outside and just cut the wire into your house?
No, I think they got a box. I think there's the tweet last week from the NFL saying they got their video box, whatever they call it.
TV box or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's probably like a camera like this and lights.
You just throw a football at it and just smash.
Or you just sit up to the side and stare into the corner like the last scene of Blair Witch Project and just hope it's over soon.
Or like Herbert runs up to his room and he's crying, and like Herbert's dad is like holding his mom as she like weeps into his arms, and they're just showing it on TV, milking it for everything it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that in play, but the further you go in the draft, the better team you get to land on. So if he goes to 23 and he lands on the Patriots, I don't think he's complaining that much.
No, yeah, if you go to 23 and you land on the Patriots, you're doing a dance.
Yeah, so I mean, the further you go, or the Saints, I mean, just these teams that could be taking quarterbacks late in the first round are perennial playoff teams, and you'd be inheriting, you know, some of the best offensive attacks in history. You know, so I'll go play for Sean Payton, I go play for Josh McDaniels. You know, let me drop to the 20s.
What were you saying, Josh?
Yeah, you had a conversation with our own Bryant McFadden earlier this week where he was taken a little bit later in the draft than he thought that he was going to be taken, and he ended up on a Super Bowl winning team. So, you know, in the moment, it feels like you're being slighted, but I feel like, you know, after you win a Super Bowl, everything's good. You don't really have any issues anymore.
Referencing other podcast episodes that you weren't on as part of a podcast you were on is a surefire way to ensure that you will be a repeat guest on this podcast. Nothing, stroking my ego will bring you back as a guest. I can promise you.
And that. Will, that was like the 52-minute mark that we started that talk.
I know. The BMAC draft stuff was actually awesome. That was not planned, and it came out great.
Do you think Josh was cutting his grass when he listened to that part of it? Was he out there on the ride lawnmower?
Look, we get a lot of free time now. We're under quarantine. You know, I'm just trying to find ways to occupy my time. Pick six. I'm not going to, you know, confirm or deny that maybe I was mowing my lawn at the time, but
I think that the best time for podcasting is mowing your lawn. I think it's great. Like for listening to podcasts, I got to tell you, my podcast listening has dropped precipitously during this quarantine, which is very bizarre. I don't even know why. Anyway, 19th pick. Who's up?
Yes. As ESPN and NFL Network equally freak out because Justin Herbert's feed just went black as he unplugged the box. The Raiders and RJ select Herbert, the quarterback from Oregon, at number 19.
Yeah, we were planning on going with a particular corner here. A.J. Terrell has gained some buzz. It seems like he could go in the teens. He can go earlier than people think. And that's when we knew we weren't going to get C.J. Henderson at 12, we thought, okay, we'll get a receiver and then Terrell at 19. But then Justin Herbert's available, and he's expected to be a top six pick by most. We think it's great value here. We know the Raiders had a video visit with him in late March, so they are doing their homework into quarterbacks as you would expect them to. I don't think that they're going into this draft saying, we need to get a quarterback. I think they're fine going into next season with Carr and Mariota as the emergency break glass situation. But if Herbert's there at 19, I mean, that's got to be a conversation that Gruden's having. He has a lot of great tools. I think he can be a good pro with the right coach. We were having a conversation earlier about, would Lamar Jackson be Lamar Jackson, you know, in a different offense and these kind of things. I think you put a quarterback with John Gruden and let him work. You know, that could be a situation where he unlocks Herbert's upside, and he's a better pro than a guy that goes 19 overall. So I think it's a good pairing here. I don't think the pressure is on Herbert to start right away. He could sit behind Mariota if we were to get rid of Carr. He could sit behind, you know, for a year, and then year two, get excited for Vegas because the young quarterback's under center.
Two things on this. One, I think the Raider call is a great one because John Gruden still to this day, I don't know, he doesn't talk about it a whole lot, but like, he has basically said that he thinks he got fired because he didn't have the huevos to stop Aaron Rodgers' fall when he was in Tampa. Like, he took Cadillac Williams instead of Rodgers at five, and he was interested in Rodgers. And then, you know, Rodgers is falling, and he gets down. You know, Green Bay takes him at 24 in 2005. Tampa was at 36. They could have easily gotten – they took Barrett Rudd there, the linebacker. They could have easily gotten up from 36 to grab – get back in the first round and stop Rodgers' fall. And I mean, who knows how long Gruden might still be coaching in Tampa if Rodgers gets drafted there. I mean, there might be like a dynasty of sorts. I mean, Gruden and Rodgers? Come on. So, that being said, Justin Herbert stinks. He's not good. He shouldn't be going in the first round. I know this because I spent all Sunday watching tape of him because Pete Prisco decided to talk some smack to me about Herbert. He's like, you don't study the tape. You don't watch the tape. I was like, I'm going to go watch three games of him right now, and I'm going to come back. And I started watching him. He's bad. He's not good. His ball placement is horrific. He doesn't step into any throw. He does, like, he throws with his arm the entire time. He had clean pockets all over the place at Oregon. I understand he didn't have the best wide receivers and tight ends in the world, but I mean, this, like, this, he's missing throws left and right. All they did was throw screens and swings. It's like 70% of his passing yardage. He should not go in the first three rounds. He's not good.
Yeah. So the argument is he was in a crappy offense that didn't suit his needs. They Mario Cristo, I don't know what they're doing running all those screens, and Brady Quinn will tell you that they didn't use Herbert's athleticism enough. And you're right, Brenton, their wide receivers suck, but guess what? They had the best or one of the two best offensive lines in the entire college football.
He had so much time back there.
And if you watch the USC game, that first quarter of the USC game, I was like, this guy just, he's not going to get it. He played terribly, and then he got red hot and played fantastic the last 45 minutes. But my point, one of the rare times I tweeted during a college football game, I said, look, if you can't have success behind the best offensive line in college football, how are you going to magically be good when you go to a terrible team in the top seven and somehow turn the corner? I say it all the time. Like, he is a great kid. I enjoy talking to him. He's incredibly smart and all this stuff, but he's a second round pick, and you can paint it any way you want. Someone compared him to Mitch Trubisky. I sort of compare him to Josh Allen in terms of all the question marks coming out, in terms of the accuracy and the crazy athleticism, how it doesn't translate. Here's the difference. He played 4 years at Oregon. Josh Allen played with a bunch of guys who aren't very good. In Pete Prisco's words, they're bouncers and bartenders now. And Mitch Trubisky played 1 year. So I would expect more upside from Mitch and Josh than I would from Justin, given the fact that he is virtually the same player that he was 4 years ago. So you can draft him all you want, and I get it. Demand is supply, all that crap, but he's not going to come in there and blow the doors off of anything. And that's not necessarily slight against him. It's just the reality of what he did at Oregon and how you project that at the next level.
Real quick, and I'm curious to hear what RJ and Josh have to say on it too, but I thought something that I think it was Brady Quinn said during our mock draft live show or at some point on CBS Sports HQ, he said, look, he started for 4 years. You cannot be a four-year starter who is a projection. Like, you can't be like, oh, he's a project. It's like, no, he started 43 games in Oregon. Like, Mitchell Trubisky at least only started like 16 games. I mean, 43 games. That is a big body of work.
Yeah, that's true. And you have to be comfortable with where he is now. So if Gruden's seeing the same thing that you are, then obviously he's not going to make that pick. But he had him in for a virtual visit. He's talked to him. They've done their work on him. So I don't think he was scratched off at, you know, February, January. He wasn't scratched off the Raiders draft list. Otherwise, why are you talking to him? So
I'm not dogging your pick, by the way.
Yeah, I think the possibility is there. Nobody expects him to go in the round two. He might be a round two type player, but nobody expects him to drop that far. I think this is kind of as far as we think he's going to get, you know, the 18 to 22, 23 range. So, we expect him to come off the board.
People are going to listen to this podcast and be like, this is stupid. You have Herbert going at 19. Like, this isn't reality. And I don't think we know for sure. Like, he could fall. Like,
number six. Then we have to start asking questions of how far he falls. Because the Chargers don't take him, who's going to go run up there and take him? The Jaguars, they seem to be sold on Gardner Minshew, and they have a bunch of other needs. And then after the Jaguars, who's going to do it?
Rich Gannon, by the way, said too, like on that podcast, like he and Gruden are very tight, obviously. He played for him. They're like the same age. He talked about that a little bit too, but like he intimated fairly heavily, I felt like, and Debo, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was like, I don't think the Raiders are in the quarterback business this offseason or this draft. Now, I think this is a different case too, where Herbert falls 19. Herbert is big. He's got a cannon. It is not surprising to me that NFL teams fall in love with him, Josh.
Yeah, I'm going to look at this from a little bit of a different perspective, because I think if you go back to him as a high school recruit, this is a guy that made a decision with his heart. Because I think he's actually from Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
So we see a lot of players that pick schools because they feel like, you know, I grew up here. I should be the starting quarterback for this team. But maybe it wasn't necessarily the best fit for him. And I think that's kind of what it goes back to with Ryan. I think Herbert has the qualities that you look for in a quarterback. You know, there's going to be arguments that you can't teach accuracy, and that's certainly valid. But at the same time, I think you have to be excited by his arm strength, some of the stuff that he's able to do from an athletic standpoint. And that's why I can understand why the Raiders would potentially take him here. But at the same time, he's a gamble. I mean, that's essentially what it boils down to. You don't know what you're going to get.
So, can Josh, what's your ceiling on Justin Herbert, NFL player?
A little better than average.
Right.
Because I don't think you're going to get that level of consistency that you would hope for him. So I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, one of those elite quarterbacks. But at the same time, if you get a little bit better than average and you're able to put a roster around him that's competitive, I think, you know, you might be able to do some damage in the playoffs if the situation is right.
You know,
but I don't think he's ever going to be up there with the top five quarterbacks.
You're describing Josh Allen. So,
yeah,
Josh Allen's a top 10 pick, so that's fine. But don't feel like this is going to be Joe Montana or something. I think his floor is like Blaine Gabbert. So Blaine Gabbert and Josh Allen is what you're getting. At 19, that feels like great value. At 5 or 6, that feels like a stretch.
Yeah, Gabbert, number 10 pick. And we were talking earlier about the buzz with Tua might be a smokescreen, that teams hate him now and he could fall. You know, who's the guy that gets pumped up in that situation? It's Herbert. You know, if Dolphins love Herbert, and Herbert could be 3 or 5, and somebody could trade up over the Dolphins to get him. But if we're talking about Tua's smokescreen season, then that Herbert, you know, love has to also be considered potentially smokescreen season. Teams are kind of pumping him up because they don't want him. And then all of a sudden he's fallen into the late teens, early 20s, and nobody expected it.
Yeah, like we're finding out the Patriots love Herbert on like 2 Mondays before the draft. Okay, sure. Yeah, I bet they do. That's something that Bill Belichick often lets happen, is his true intentions for a prospect float out into a massive mainstream media article that literally everyone read and then people wrote blogs about. Like, it definitely happens all the time. Okay.
All right. Next pick. I got things to do.
I'm getting word from the league office that the NFL didn't decide to pay for the pro version of Zoom, so we're running out of time here.
okay, do you want to...
No, we're good. Let's just keep it going, and we'll be a little bit quicker. With the 20th pick, the Jaguars and Ryan Wilson select Jeff Gladney, cornerback TCU.
Not going to take Justin Herbert had he been there. We were happy to get Gladney. He's a little undersized, but he's extremely physical, extremely fast. Legit cover corner. He won't replace Jalen Ramsey by himself, but it'll help that defense get better with the addition of our number 9 pick, Derek Brown. Thank you.
All right, move it along.
With the 21st. Right,
hey, by the way, Pete Prisco gave that an A because it's the Jaguars. That was the other argument I had with Prisco. We were having, like, I know we're derailing it. This is a savage murdering of Prisco via text on Sunday morning, where he was like piping up about the Jags and how like Dave Caldwell hadn't done that bad a job. I was like, Pete, he's 40 games under 500 as a general manager. The Jaguars could go undefeated for 2 consecutive seasons and he would still be 8 games under 500 as a GM. Like, Pete, shut your tan little cake hole. He sucks.
He has done okay if you take out the quarterbacks.
His draft, yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Yes. Then I was like going into Twitter and bringing up old Prisco Bortles tweets and just like bombing this thread. And Jamie was just watching it and cackling as I like just savagely destroyed him.
I see Pete stomping around his penthouse there, yelling at you via his wife. All right, get back up. Let's do
The 21st and the most anticipated pick in the 2020 draft, the Super Bowl 52 champion Philadelphia Eagles and Josh Edwards select national champion Kalyvon Chaisson, edge, LSU.
Yeah, so for me, he was best player available, which is something that Howie Roseman is prone to do. I think he can play the Sam in that defense. I also think that he could possibly be the replacement for Brandon Graham after next year, if that's the direction they decided to go in. So it's both a short-term and a long-term need for this position. At the same time, I also considered LSU long snapper Steve Wartell here, or actually LSU long snapper Blake Ferguson for Debo's Eagles. So it was really tough, but at the end of the day, it came down to Chaisson and Ferguson.
I bet Debo has a preference among those long snapper Steve. So he would have loved one and hated the other.
Can't replace John Dorenbos. With the 22nd pick, the Vikings and R.J. White select A.J. Terrell, cornerback, Clemson.
Yeah, I was talking about how I think Terrell's going to go earlier than people think. You know, he could be long gone by this point. The Raiders could take him with one of their picks, Niners, Falcons, if they don't trade up. Cowboys, I think, makes sense at 17. I think furthest he falls is probably 20. I don't think he has as high a floor as the top two guys in this class, but he shines in the press. And that press physicality makes him like Mike Hughes, a recent round one prospect in Minnesota. So I think he kind of fits what they want to do in Minnesota. We know that they need corners. They lost their top three corner, or three of their top four corners this offseason. So expect one of these first two picks, maybe even both of them, for the first two picks to be corners if you're the Vikings.
So with the 23rd pick, the Patriots and Ryan Wilson finally select Jordan Love, quarterback, Utah State.
So the Patriots actually traded down to 26 with their good buddy Brian Flores and the Dolphins, just to give the Saints hope that they're going to get Jordan Love. But then they traded right back up. So it was like one trade. They came back up. Sean Payton was like, yes! He's like, what? What are they doing? Unbelievable. Just out of spite, we took Jordan Love. There's no way you're getting them New Orleans. You got to stick with Taysom Hill.
I did think about, in hindsight, I was like, wait, what? I was like, you know what I was doing on Friday? I was playing tennis, and this is what got me messed up.
That was it.
No. I was like, the 49ers, I was like, why can't I get anybody to trade with me? I should have just traded up as the Saints to get Jordan Love. That was the perfect spot to do it. And I regret not doing that.
You know the great thing about you being GM of four teams? You're going to get fired by four teams. That's how terrible your draft has been. Out there playing tennis and poker tournaments, everything but your job.
Yeah, but we went to the Super Bowl last year, so suck it.
We'll hire the other three Brinsons when they get fired then.
Four Brinsons in one front office. Good God. I'm surprised you haven't put a bigger flag in the Jordan Love Hill.
Yeah.
It's like you like him a lot better than,
if you want to make Prisco angry, just say all you say about Jordan Love is, oh God, he reminds me of Patrick Mahomes. Exactly. He gets very angry at that. He is not Patrick Mahomes, but he has those type of qualities in terms of the arm strength, the ability to move around the pocket. He takes chances. You watch him play, he sort of moves like Jordan Love, Pat Mahomes. But yeah, there's no denying 2019 was terrible. He was much better in 2018. And I think the upside with Jordan Love is tenfold what you get with Justin Herbert for the reasons that Josh pointed out. He's been there for 4 years. He stayed at home. There are questions about Justin Herbert's leadership. I don't know if those are legit or not, but he told me straight up, yeah, that's what teams want to see from me at the Senior Bowl. So.
And I think if you're the Chargers, that's why you go Love over Herbert if you're going quarterback. Yeah, I know you didn't do it in this mock, but you do it for the upside. Because if you're playing a division with Patrick Mahomes, you got to reach as high upside as you possibly can at the quarterback position if you're going to compete with him. And Jordan Love isn't Patrick Mahomes, like you said. But if he ends up reaching his ceiling, he could be a difference maker at the quarterback position. And then you're competing for a division title every year with that guy. I don't think anybody thinks you're doing that with Herbert.
Yeah, and I mean, I would even go so far as to say, you mentioned landing spots at the end of the first round for quarterbacks, RJ. Put Jordan Love on the Patriots or put Justin Herbert on the Patriots. I think you win more games 3 years from now with Jordan Love on the Patriots than you do with Justin Herbert.
I agree, and that's because they're going to develop their quarterbacks well. We don't know how much development is there for Herbert, you know, what he could do. But that ceiling for Love is pretty high. So if they unlock some of that ceiling, then I would feel comfortable saying that too. Probably winning the division for the next 20 years at that point.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, with that pick that you didn't trade, Will, you selected Kenneth Murray, linebacker, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a guy that has had some instances where he sort of over-pursues a little bit. You can get him going the wrong way with some misdirection stuff in terms of mixing him up, but it's a position of need for the Saints. He is an excellent sideline-to-sideline linebacker, actually a good defensive player for Oklahoma, which has been rare over the past many, many years. And I think the Saints would be thrilled to get Jordan Love in a trade-up situation, but this is perfectly fine sitting back here. And I think this is a spot where we're going to see one to two linebackers, maybe three, come off the board. Just feels like a real position of need for some of the squads on here. So thrilled to get Kenneth Murray without moving at 24.
All right, a couple picks after taking A.J. Terrell, R.J. White, and the Vikings with the 25th pick select Etor Gross-Mattis, defensive end or edge, out of the Pennsylvania State University.
Yeah, a lot of people assume receiver here to replace Diggs, but they can wait. It's a deep draft for receiver. I wouldn't mind some of these teams that everybody mocks receivers to, like the Eagles, waiting and getting one in, on day two, because there's not going to be that much difference between the guys you get there as you do in day two. So we went Gross Matos. I mean, it seems like the perfect kind of Vikings pick. He has great traits. He's still getting better. Zimmer will help him reach his ceiling. It's another guy to pair with Danielle Hunter now that Griffin's gone. I would have explored a trade down if he wasn't here, but because he's here, I think you make this pick. Then you go get receiver a little bit later in the draft. I mean, Diggs and Thielen weren't premier draft picks anyway. It's not like they invest highly in this position to get impact players. They're able to get guys later and develop them into good players. So I think we should expect that in this draft too. And they focus on another higher position in need where you're not going to find as good players later in the draft in the first round.
With the 26th pick, the Dolphins and Josh Edwards select Patrick Queen, linebacker, LSU.
He was the best player available to me. I think he's an immediate large upgrade over Vince Beagle inside. I love Jerome Baker. I think he's capable of covering sideline to sideline. But now you have two kind of smaller linebackers that are capable of doing so. So it allows you to be more versatile with your team. It allows you to cover sideline to sideline, every single blade of grass. They're going to be a fast defense, and they're going to get after the quarterback. So for me, he was the best player available, and it was a pretty easy pick.
Hey, Debo.
Yeah.
Just so you know, buddy, I haven't been ignoring your Slack messages. I forgot to sign in, so I haven't seen any of them. Debo's been slacking me with zero response for like 30 minutes, I think. Sorry. My apologies.
Well, Will, but here is your final pick of the draft with the 27th overall pick, the Seahawks and Will Brinson select Marlon Davidson, defensive lineman, Auburn.
Yeah, this was a weird pick. I hate having to mock the Seahawks because I know you're going to be wrong. Like, you know, whatever person you put in for the Seahawks is not going to be the person that they take. They either trade out, or they've done a ton under John Schneider, or they do some random ass move and take like Rashad Penny or LJ Collier. Like, they just do random stuff with their first round pick. So I actually, picked two random names off a top prospect list and flipped a coin, and Marlon Davidson was the first guy that came out.
And right up in your job interview when you're interviewing for GM jobs after you get fired from this one.
If we didn't have anybody assigned to the teams that weren't in the first round, but I contacted Brinson after the 25th pick, and I said, hey, if the guy that they want is available, the Rams would like to trade their 2 second-round picks to get up to this spot for a guy. That was Patrick Queen, and he went off the board the next pick. So that blew up in our faces. I think the Rams, now that they have those two picks, could get into this range for an impact linebacker, get over the Ravens if he's there. I expect those two linebackers, Queen and Murray, might go a little bit earlier than we have, though, just because they're kind of head and shoulders above the next guys. And I think anybody in the 15 to 24 range could be looking at him.
Well, another linebacker edge guy with a 28th pick. The Ravens and Ryan Wilson select Zach Bond from Wisconsin.
Yeah, at RJ's point, the Ravens would have loved to have had Queen or Murray there. Both are gone. So we go Zach Bond, edge rusher. He's a little undersized, but he made it clear he wants to play on the edge. So if you do that with him, you have someone to pair with Matt Judon, who's on that franchise deal, or kick him inside a little bit early in the downs and have him be a situational pass rusher. His athleticism off the charts. He played really well at Wisconsin, and he flashed a lot, as the folks like to say. But we don't get Queen or Murray. We're not taking a receiver here. We're taking Zach Bond.
And I think that versatility plays up for the Ravens. They do a lot of different things with guys on defense. You get Bond, he could do a couple different things. Maybe you circle back in the second round, you get one of those safety linebacker types, a Jeremy Chinn, Kyle Duggar, those kind of guys that you expect can do some different things, line them up in different places. Then you have a lot of options on the table if you're the Ravens to replace what you lost this offseason.
With the 29th pick, another LSU player off the board, the Titans and RJ White select Christian Fulton, who, just a note, will be on the podcast later this week. We mentioned a lot of prospect interviews coming. Christian Fulton, along with a couple other first-round prospects, will be one of them.
By the way, if you hear these prospect interviews, I think Wilson's going to do them. This is me deciding for the best of the podcast. We need more Wilson. We need the smart draft guy to do it. I'm not ceding any power to Ryan Wilson. I know someone will make that joke. It's not happening.
Two things. You probably have a tennis appointment you don't want to miss. And number two,
and it's also true.
I think RJ, your new hip hop name should be RJ Whack, as Devo refers to you. I like that.
Yeah, we know that anybody choosing their own name in hip hop would want to have the name Whack as part of it.
DJ Whack.
It's not the worst thing you could do. So we went Fulton. We're worried about some of the off-field stuff. He missed a season with suspension, but it feels like a good value here. Good size, ability to start on the outside. Having Byard in center field helps cover his deficiencies, which is, you know, staying with guys deep. When you have a great free safety, I think that takes away some of that. So Titans should be looking corner. They have surprisingly a lot of needs. They had lost some players this offseason. So they could go here. They could go defensive line. They could go a few other places. Fulton would be a solid value pick here.
With the 30th pick, the Packers and Josh Edwards select Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver, Arizona State.
Yeah, so this is an explosive player. We saw N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State a year ago go in the first round. I think Brandon Ayuk is a much better player at this stage. We know where Aaron Rodgers is at this point in his career. You need to put weapons around him. It's way too early to take a tight end. Brandon Ayuk, for me, was the best wide receiver on the board. I feel pretty confident putting him out there against Devontae Adams next season.
And we have our final trade. It's been a little while since a trade. Brinson hasn't had a pick, so hasn't had the opportunity to trade, but he does here. The 49ers were slated to select at number 31, but the Giants and R.J. White were whack, are back into the first round, sending 36 and 99 to the 49ers for 31. And with that 31st pick, they select Cesar Ruiz, center from Michigan.
Yeah, it's a tiny bit of an overpay, but after turning 110 into 70 earlier, we still come out ahead. You know, now that we're picking 70th instead of 99th, I think we're fine. I don't think he's going to be there at 36 with KC next. Miami could also trade up. They have all the capital in the world to get up and get a guy that they need. He's scheme versatile. He can hold his own with the quality guards next to him in New York. I think the Giants might actually think center is a bigger need than right tackle based on some of the quotes that have come out over the last week or so. So there's urgency to make a move here to get him. Obviously, you're not going to take him up there at four, but they could even go, you know, Simmons at four and then not circle back and get a tackle with their day two pick or trade up here. Instead, go with a guy like Ruiz at center, and he kind of slides right in, and he's your center for the next 10 years.
The only thing I can hear in my head right now is Chris Cross saying, wiggity, wiggity, whack.
So a little bit of insight to redirect from that. A little bit of insight. As the Miami general manager, I was actually about to hit up Brinson and be like, I am very, very interested in the number 31 overall pick. I'm going to try to move up. This deal happened very quickly. I didn't even get a chance to make a call. I was going to take Cesar Ruiz. So RJ was in the frame of mind. He moved up. He got his player. I was asleep at the wheel. I'm probably getting fired, but that's where we are.
No, this was, RJ knew I was trying. I was like, I knew I was trying to trade down. And he had a deal in place. In fact, when I sent that email that was like, hey, I'm trying to move down, RJ was like, no, I own the pick already. The trade has happened.
Yeah. We talked earlier in chat about that offer and said, if the guy wants there, and you said, yep, we'll do it if you want to do it. So as soon as Ayuk was the pick and I started typing it in, I already had Wilson's pick in hand because he sent me an email earlier. I was ready to get this draft over because I think we were going on 72 hours at this point. So just wanted to button it up and be done with it.
All right. And so let's wrap it up with the final pick.
We'll do that here with the final and 32nd pick in the first round of the 2020 Pick 6 Live virtual mock draft. The Chiefs and Ryan Wilson select Trayvon Diggs, cornerback from Alabama.
So as RJ mentioned, I emailed him to say I would like to have Cesar Ruiz at 32. And he emailed back, you're not getting him because I'm taking him at 31. So I had to settle on Trayvon Diggs. And I don't – settle might be the wrong word. He's big, strong, questions about his deep speed. But he's a former wide receiver, and we know that his brother, Stephon Diggs, so he's a type of physical playmaking receiver down the field that you want, and the Chiefs could have one more weapon in that defense. That got better as the season progressed last year, and I know Breland's coming back, but they like big cornerbacks, and I think Trayvon Diggs makes a lot of sense there.
All right. That's the mock draft. That show was long. That was really – I don't want to tell you. I thought there were some good tangents, some good discussion about Tua, about trades, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love. I feel like we got a real nice, meaty mock draft, a great way to close up the season. Some would call it robust and excellent work. Anything we want to add before we get out of here?
It's been a pleasure being on Mock Draft Monday. It's a busy season for all of us, especially Ryan, but it's always fun to get through. And with the finish line just a few days away, you know, can't wait to get into May and have absolutely nothing to talk about. So,
or since there aren't any sports, we'll just keep talking about draft grades for a month and a half. You're not Ryan thinks his job's about to get easier. I don't think so, pal. You're going to be talking on HQ for the next.
We'll talk 2021 mock draft next week when those come out.
That's right. And then tomorrow, Super Friends back. Bold draft predictions. I believe John Breach will be on, Devo?
Should be.
Breach is back. Baby Breach. He's at the house. Everything's going well with him. So we will be excited to talk to John Breach. Haven't talked to him in a while. Thank you guys, as always, for doing this. It's been a blast. We'll talk soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.